podcast is part of the Batman Universe Podcast Network, hosted by thebatmanuniverse.net. Here, we love talking about everything Batman. Thebatmanuniverse.net has news, original content, and reviews about Batman comics, movies, TV shows, video games, and more. Check out thebatmanuniverse.net and join our Discord server to start chatting with fellow fans. We can't wait to talk to you guys. Also, visit our Patreon page and join our other awesome supporters. But enough of this nonsense. On with the show.
Gotham City, like any other large metropolis, abounds in girls of all shapes and sizes. Debutantes, nurses, stenographers, and librarians.
Gotham City Library, Miss Gordon speaking.
Lopez hair removal, this is Jose.
Holy transformation. 1 minute, plain Barbara Gordon, librarian and Commissioner Gordon's daughter. And the next minute, something new has been added. Batgirl, modeled after her idol, Batman.
Holy apparition!
No, Boy Wonder, I'm Batgirl. You are no longer alone, Caped Crusaders.
It took me 3 years to track down the Jade Gatto, and 3 more to figure out how to steal it.
Funny, it only took me 10 minutes to figure out how to snatch it back.
No matter how you do it, crime doesn't pay, girls.
I know you wanted me to stay, but I can't ignore the crazy visions of me in LA. I heard that there's a special place where boys and girls can all be queens every single day. I'm having wicked dreams of leaving Tennessee. You Santa Monica, I swear it's calling me. Won't make my mama proud, it's gonna cause a scene. She sees her baby girl, I know she's gonna scream. God, what have you done? You're a pink pony girl, and you dance at the club, oh mama.
Mihi nomen est, Stella, et hoc est, Batgirl the Oracle, the Barbara Gordon Podcast, episode 252 for November MMXXIV. Batgirl the Oracle is brought to you by MileHighComics.com, your new and collectible comics bookstore. Mile High Comics has an inventory of over 5 million comics from the gold, silver, bronze, and modern age, and over 100,000 trade paperbacks. If you're not into the vintage stock, Mile High Comics also has a subscription service called the New Issue Comics Express, offering a discounted price for comics ready to hit the shelves. So if you're looking for vintage back issues or a great modern subscription service, be sure to check out MileHighComics.com. Not much to say in this intro. You know, the election happened and here we are. Some people are happy. Some people are not happy. I think we have an interesting 4 years ahead of us. And we should just pray or offer our thoughts to whatever we believe in. As the Quakers say, where I work, hold all of us in the light. I do want to share something frustrating, and that's in terms of the music. So this show has been going on for, 14 years now, and I've always had this intro music that somehow connects to the vintage, and then I have my Zias' Radio Hour that has that break, and now, Spotify is snapping down, and I think others as well, which is unfortunate because I feel like I'm using it with the best of intentions, very much trying to promote the artist as well as using it artistically in order to support my craft. But just want to let you know that depending on where you're getting your episodes, you might have blank spaces, which is super frustrating because I feel like this podcast is almost on its way out. I'm about to reach where I began and, it might end. And so I just wish I could carry on the way that it's always been for the past 14 years. But right now it just seems if you really want to know what songs have been playing, that you get a direct route from the batmanuniverse.net. But other than that, yeah, sorry. So I guess your imagination can play One Size's Radio Hour. And I say what it is. And I guess if I get too fed up, then I'll just cut it. But it's just, I'm kind of stubborn in the way that this is how it was. And this is how I would like to end my show. And kind of don't want the man to bully me into it. So I just wanted to warn you about that. And I don't even think I'll have a Zeiss's Radio Hour this episode, because I think I can just do the issues that I want to do without a break. So I think that's primarily what it is. And just so I don't forget, I hope you all have a wonderful Thanksgiving with whomever you spend it with, or perhaps it's Friendsgiving, which I had been aware of. I feel like I wasn't aware of that until I had some queer friends that would get together and have Friendsgiving, and said, because they couldn't necessarily go home, their relationships with their family wasn't as great. So yes, wherever you're celebrating, which of course Thanksgiving is really like colonists' holiday of some sort. So just be aware of that. I think that's basically it for my intro. I will say, and we're a couple of days out from my birthday, so huzzah. I am going to just cover two modern tales, kind of in podcast fatigue for November, because I had to edit a required reading. I had to record and edit a Dear Reader, and then I had to record another required reading, and then I've got this. So it's like, I don't know that I want to do any vintage tales this time. But background number one has arrived, and so I thought, why not give this a go? It's Batgirl. This is Batgirl the Oracle. So have this on the show. And had I been better prepared or had more time in my life, I would have also entertained the thought of having Big D himself on this show. But here we are. This is Batgirl Volume 6, if you can believe it. And issue number one, All In, Mother, Part 1 of 6. Writer Tate Bromble, artist Takeshi Miyazawa, and colorist Mike Spicer. Hold on to your seats. This is the publisher's synopsis. Clutch your pearls and rejoice in celebration, because Cassandra Cain is taking center stage in her first solo Batgirl series in nearly two decades. When a deadly group of assassins shows up to kill Cassandra, Lady Shiva comes to the rescue, and they must put their complicated past aside and work together as mother and daughter to ensure they make it out alive. Unfortunately, things are never as easy as they seem, and Cass must embark on a jaw-dropping, martial arts-filled adventure in her quest for truth and justice and revenge. It's a Batgirl book like never before, so join us as we dive into the psyche of one of Gotham's deadliest fighters while exploring her deep and complex relationship with her mother. Lots to pull apart there, I have to say, and I think these are really bold statements to make, and we'll see if these turn out to be true statements. I think one of the boldest things to say is that this is, quote, a Batgirl book like never before. So, bold statement. We'll see if Bromble comes through with that. Truth, justice, and revenge, we'll see, because as we'll find out in this particular story, she really has no connection with the, what are they called? The Unburied. It's more, it seems like Shiva's, but we'll see. This is issue one, so there are, I think, more questions than answers. Psyche, diving into her psyche, I think will be really interesting. And I think that's also a big statement to make, that what is Bromble going to do that had not been done from her original stories? Are we going to retread some territory that we've seen before? Or is new territory going to be opened up for us? I'm really interested in this. And I think at this point in time, I'm also going to start setting aside my beliefs of who Batgirl is in this current era and just go with it. So I think I will start resisting the compulsion to make notes about her speech patterns and her vocabulary and things like that. And we'll just say, like, this is Cassandra now. This is who she is. But I will talk about that a bit more. And then I think definitely it seems to be the point, the whole point of this book so far, especially with this arc, is exploring her quote unquote deep and complex relationship with Lady Shiva. So I am looking forward to that because I think Cassandra is interesting on her own, but she's also one of those characters that you enjoy reading how she is interacting with other people, and they are kind of highlighted in different ways. So what is Cassandra like with Tim Drake? What is Cassandra like with Stephanie Brown? What is Cassandra like with David Kane? What's Cassandra like with Batman? What's Cassandra like with Lady Shiva? And so this will be interesting. And I think we'll also have to make it so that we are open for differences, especially with Lady Shiva and this relationship, rather than constant comparison. So that's, of course, a note for myself as well as fans. I will say, as I was thinking, I'm not sure how new reader friendly this issue is. That was not even a part of my notes, but just as I was thinking about what I was talking about and all this and, you know, letting the past Shiva and Cassandra go, I don't know that I could hop on this necessarily and fully understand what was happening. You're definitely going to miss the nuances and the reason why these two are at it right from the get-go, right from panel one, page one. I mean, Shiva starts off with, you know, I never wanted a daughter, and Cass saying, you talk like I wanted a mother. So just starting off like that is pretty strong. And I think as a new reader, I would be probably thrown and not understand. I also think, and just in terms of the whole story, I don't know that I would be super attracted to this as a new reader, just because it's a lot of, I mean, fighting and then trying to cajole one to join the other. And there's just a lot of like, what's going on? Why should I care about this necessarily? But I think you are invested if you know Cassandra and maybe the Batgirl legacy or Lady Shiva in advance of this. But definitely, yeah, chime in if you disagree with me, or if you are a new reader, if you feel like, yeah, I totally got on board quickly and I was engaged, because right now it does not feel like, which I think is great for Cass fans, that Bromble is really going after the veterans, the people who have been with Cass from the very beginning. I think that that's great. But then you do wonder, what is the space that we are making for new readers? I really liked the art. This is not the first time that I've seen Takeshi Miyazawa as an artist, and so I was super excited about that. I don't know who Tate Bromble is, so I think I was more excited about the art overall and seeing maybe what this Cass Kane book would be like. But the art, I think, was amazing throughout. And with the fighting sequences, which often are occurring in double page splashes, I think that is really important and key for success with a Cassandra Cain book, because I think it's going to be, even though we're talking about the psyche and relationships, it's going to be a lot of fighting. And I think we need to have an artist and a writer be able to communicate great fighting scenes with that. And I think that we see that here in this first issue. I think I'm fine with Cassandra's speech and her speech patterns, short and pointed. So I'm good with that. I guess I've given up on her hemming and hawing, trying to figure out certain words. But I think that this, I relate more, or I feel like this is a better representation of where I probably would think that she would be compared to probably the Birds of Prey interpretation. I like how throughout this whole story, she is constantly reading her mother, even in the midst of action scenes like that, which just shows how little, which means not at all, she trusts her mother. And I think that that's also something that is very Cassandra, that she would be constantly reading someone that she would consider her nemesis or her enemy. So I do appreciate that. Obviously, this is the first issue, so I think a lot of things are too soon to tell, but to be honest, I enjoyed this issue. I thought that it was good so far. I think the main thing for me that was unbelievable is, and this is something that I use to judge romance novels with, which of course, you know, I'm able to speed read through those. One of my favorite tropes is friends to lovers. And when they start to realize maybe it could be either one-sided or double-sided, but we don't have that information, that they have feelings for the other person. I always wonder, what is the inciting incident? Because I guess feelings can kind of just happen, but like, where did this start? Or even if it's enemies to lovers, or if it's the friends with benefits, that sort of situation, like, when did this start? It has to be believable that if these two people were enemies, how did we all of a sudden shift to having some sort of sexual desire towards the other person? So my connection to this is that, what is the inciting incident? Where are these unburied coming from? Why now? I think that that's a huge question. And I would also like to say that, wasn't their catchphrase, what is buried may never be unburied? What is it? What is buried always comes to light. And I have to say that every time that was mentioned, which was a couple times, I was thinking of the Greyjoys and their house motto of, what is dead may never die. And you had to repeat that if someone else said that. So that was a little too much. But yeah, where are they coming from? Why now? I think we'll find out, because this is issue one, number one. But you know, my next point was, don't trust Lady Shiva for sure. And I'm just like, man, did she bring these people? And this is like a weird tactic for her to get Cassandra to be with her by using this threat that's been gone for hundreds of years. Yeah, I don't know. I personally think, and this is up to other people as well to comment on, given that Cassandra and Shiva are not my expertise, that I feel like both characters are written pretty believably. I'd like to hear if you disagree or you agree with me. And yeah, I think I already talked about the action sequences, that I very much enjoyed it. One of the things that was really interesting is that Shiva cared about what happened to her temple and the people inside, or as much as Shiva can, I guess. Yeah, I mean, she says, when the world turned on me, they were the only ones who answered. So it does seem like there's some modicum of care for her people. And then, yeah, more fighty fights going on. So we'll see, to be continued, as you can tell. I think, you know, just to, I guess, hedge, I'll probably give this an 8.5 out of 10. That was pretty solid, which I say 8.5 out of 10 mother-daughter spats. And yeah, I feel like it's a solid B, and we'll see where we go from there. The other issue that I'm going to look at is going to be Birds of Prey. And this is volume 5, number 15, Bird Undercover Part 2. Writer Kelly Thompson, artist Sami Basri, and colorist Adriana Lucas. The team uncovers the Ninth Day cult's deadly secrets. Things have gone sideways in the Birds of Prey's investigation of the Ninth Day cult, and the Birds' undercover operative Cassandra Cain has gone deathly silent. The team going in to break her out are heavy hitters of the highest order: Black Canary, Big Barda, Grace Choi, and Onyx, with Oracle at mission control and Sin frustrated she's been benched. But what they find is so much more than they feared. And as I'm reading that, I'm thinking, wow, the solicitation is off once again. Who double checks these? I guess who's in charge of solicitations? So I will say that yes, Cassandra Cain has gone deathly silent, but nothing else happens. That makes it sound like a whole bunch of stuff is going on in this, but everyone's sort of sitting around contemplating what to do, since they don't see or hear anything from Cass, and Cass is really the one who's doing stuff inside. Some lies there, but here we go. I will say I really like this cover. It's classic Birds of Prey. Now, technically, hashtag Carolyn knows, but we also have a bunch of other floating heads there, so I can appreciate that. And that was from Leonardo Romero. So I have some questions, of course. So we were picking up where, remember, Cass, aka Hot Cass, is checking out the merchandise. And this moment here where Cass, undercover Cass, is figuring out, you know, how were these Amazons acquired? And the one guy in the robes there says, you know, there was so much chaos when the U.S. went to war with the Amazons that we were just able to sort of scoop them up. And her next comment doesn't seem to connect logically. When I think that someone scoops somebody else up, I would say that you kidnapped them or you stole them or they were comatose and you picked them up and you put them in, you know, these stasis chambers. But instead, Cass said you bought them. And I don't really know the logical connection there because no money was mentioned at all. And that implies that someone else had gotten the Amazons and then you bought them from that person. And I feel like the waters are a bit muddy at this point. And it's also odd because if this current group bought them, then why are they also trying to sell them again and now sell them with Cass because she gets captured? So I'm a bit confused about that. This person, I can't remember his name, but I guess in the end, it won't really matter. I enjoyed when they all of a sudden decide to turn on Cass that he starts screaming like a little baby. Oh God, she has me, Jens, help me. She ripped my favorite shirt, which is really interesting. So even though he seems to have very powerful arms, he's one of those people who I think has it for show and doesn't actually use his muscles. Who even knows if he runs? He might be one of those people that they're large, but they have zero cardio. I was a bit confused about this section, because she says that she was compromised when she's in the vent trying to communicate her communique with the birds, that she's compromised. But, and I was trying to figure out how or in what way, like, how'd she give herself away? This is the second time she was attacked. She kind of made it into the inner chamber. How this happened? Did it make sense at all? I will say that later on, we do come to realize that they just want her, like they want the Amazons, and that there's some sort of deal surrounding her. So too soon to tell what that is. So I guess it makes sense that we're confused because Cass would assume that she was compromised, but even Cass should be considering like how was she compromised? So it didn't make sense until we got the end, which is sometimes, I think that's something that I need to work on because I very much do look at the minutiae and I don't pull back sometimes and like, oh, what's the connection? So I do, that's something I just need to work on is like, look at the whole piece and see how everything's working together. But often I think I do pull back and say like, oh, this question was answered later on, that sort of thing. I really appreciate and also find it interesting how hard Barda is taking the loss of Cass and that they haven't heard from Cass at all. And we have Dinah going to talk to her. And it was also interesting trying to think of who says this, but someone says that Cass is the favorite. Oh no, who said this? Well, we know that they're close. I find this very endearing, though, the fact that Barda is so beat up and even Sin is saying she loves Cass. She calls her small bat. She'll never forgive any of us if something happens to her. I think I agree. So she seems to be, I don't know, the team pet. Okay, I found it. Apologies. It is here when Dinah is talking to Barda and saying, everyone is worried about Cass Barda. She is, in my experience, pretty much everyone's favorite in every scenario. And it's absolutely no surprise to me that you took to her as you did, which I found really interesting. Obviously, this is my bias, but to think that of this team that Cass would be the number one. And I feel like this is also, would I be using correctly if I say this, but I think also considering fans and everything, that looking at the team, I mean, I don't know that Bart is going to be the favorite member of the team, but I feel like Dinah would be pretty close. And then you have Babs. So it's interesting that Cass is the one. And we would have to do one of those AP polls to see, you know, of the Batgirls, who is the favorite and see if we could get a definitive answer on that. But I thought that that was really interesting. And potentially it shows author bias. And then my conspiracy theory comes back up again about Thompson having that one bad day on that tweet. And then I just wondered if it had to do with Cass, which would be a bummer. Like if you were told you can't write your favorite character, it would be very sad. So perhaps my conspiracy theory is alive and well, but I just found that quite interesting. I do like that Dinah is showing her leadership, not only in talking with Barda, trying to talk her down, also with Sin telling her that she kind of needs to be benched because of what happened in the weird stuff that went on in the previous arc. And then also telling Grace Choi and Onyx to take Barda's mind off things with non-strenuous activity, which they're confused, which then we get to this scene here, which was scary because I thought once we get to this end where we have basically a Bane breaking the back situation, I thought Grace Choi is dead. She is not returning to us. But then we find out that it was a video game, and I found it amusing that Barda then says, "Hello, to my chagrin, Diana got up much faster than you," and everyone's super upset that no one could beat Barda at this video game. So some comedic levity as other stuff is going on. I say Cass is now Spider-Girl, or I guess we could say Silk. So we're kind of staying in terms of cultural identity. But yes, she is able to use those thin spaces in order to crawl up the wall and hang upside down. I do find this really interesting, how she's able to escape. This whole sequence is like, yeah, that's 100% Cass and super cool. I think the last thing, and we don't know who this big person is, strange bedfellows. Wouldn't it be interesting if it were Creote or Savant or somebody? The last thing that I do want to say about this is I'm just a bit confused how and why Babs has not received the transmission yet that Cass sent. And also why this guy is wearing that bangle now that Cass had before. He actually comments on it. And I feel like, should it not be maybe transmitting now while it's on his hands? But I think that's the only thing that did not make sense. A short message has come in. It's garbled as hell, but I'll try to clean it up, run it through some filters. And it just seems like a lot of time passes. And I have more faith in Barbara's abilities to do that a bit more quickly than it seems to be happening in this. So yeah, I think those are mostly my comments. I wonder if this is the last story that we'll see Little Bat in, which would be a shame because I do like her on this team and the dynamics. But if you're told by editorial, who knows, again, conspiracy theory, but if you're told by editorial that you can't use that character anymore, then I guess what can you do? So that is it for Birds of Prey. That I'm going to give 8.5 Spider Girls out of 10. Listener emails, yeah, haven't really been getting many, I would say, or I should say any, been getting zero. But I will say that on BTO episode 251, part one on YouTube, I did get a comment from the Big D saying, "I like Cass's riot girl fashion. It feels more right for her than any sort of fashionable put together ensemble." Couldn't explain why though, since I talked about her getup when she went to the party that her coffee companion held. I mean, that was basically it. Remember, you can, questions, comments, always go to backrolltheoracle@gmail.com. And remember also, I was thinking of my questions. Yeah, what'd you think about Batgirl number one and whether you thought that they were written appropriately and whether it was new reader friendly? Those would be my questions that I would have for you. Anime watchlist, boy, it's been a long time. Don't know if this counts, but I think it does. Tomb Raider, The Legend of Lara Croft. 8 episodes on Netflix. They range from 25 minutes to, a little over 40. And this series takes place after the Tomb Raider reboot trilogy, which concluded with Shadow of the Tomb Raider. And then it fills in the gap in the timeline between this reboot trilogy to the original series of games. And I'm trying to think if this is new watcher friendly. I feel like it is. I think you'll best appreciate maybe some of the things, especially Jonah being there, because otherwise you'd be like, what's going on? But other than that, I feel like it's, a completely new adventure. So Jonah would be one thing that might hold you back from if you were a new watcher, and then Sam and those flashes from the first game. But otherwise, I thought it was pretty good. But as I was talking to Harry about, it's interesting how flawed a character Lara Croft actually is, because everyone loves her and they talk so highly of her, but she makes some poor decisions. And especially her interactions with people, you're like, why are you doing this? Do you not see that this is like toxic and maybe you shouldn't be doing this? So I find that very interesting. I've also been watching Arcane, which I know I had heard from many people that it was quite good. And now I'm like, it is quite good. Locked in, as they say. I'm really nervous about what's going to happen. I watched first season, and then I did just finish tonight as of the recording, the first act of season two. And I just couldn't believe Caitlin and Vi, and then like moments later breaking up. I'm like, please, could they have a happy ending, or is this just not the show? Don't count on a happy ending for them. But Vi is super cool. I really like her. And I don't like Jace. I just feel like he's weak sauce and manipulable. Yeah. Someone who is constantly manipulated. That's what I feel like. He just does not seem to have any backbone, but I know that people really like him and probably also think that he's attractive, but he just annoys me. And Jinx is super scary. So there you go. Caitlin, I think, is cool, but I am disappointed in her actions at the end of act one in season two. So we'll see, but I'll give you my full, I guess, recommendation or review next episode. So yeah, next episode, it will be my anniversary, as well as I'll probably do my best of in all those categories. In advance of that, if you ever want to send me your best of with, you know, video game and maybe song or album or movie that you've seen, TV show, that sort of stuff, please send it my way. Next is Stella's Dungeon of Smut, brought to you by Hornacek Fried Calamari Sticks. And I'm trying to see if I read several over the past couple weeks, I think possibly because of the election and just wanting to get my mind off of it. But I do see one that I did 4 stars. Let me just refresh my memory, because they were all these here. Oh, okay. Billion Dollar Enemy by Olivia Hale. It is the Seattle Billionaires number one. And it started as a one night stand. My one night stand turns out to be my billion dollar enemy. And this, I think I loved it so much because it almost turned into You've Got Mail, because he's like trying to, not really him personally, but his company is like trying to get the space that the bookstore that she works at occupies currently. And then once they meet again post one night stand, they decide to get together again. And I just thought that was really good. But then what's funny is once I read that, then all of a sudden all these other like one night stands, we see each other again pop up. And I'm like, you know, once is enough for me. It's just too much sometimes. The same tropes over and over again. You got to do something to make it good. And I think that's the only one that I would recommend. So there you go. Okay. So now my final one, which is literature recommendations. And first, The Iliad by Homer, obviously, and translated by Emily Wilson. Highly recommend, 5 out of 5. And please go over to Dear Reader, which is at the Fire and Water Podcast Network, to listen to my show, season 3, which is based off of The Iliad. But honestly, yeah, an amazing translation, beautifully rendered by Emily Wilson. Such Charming Liars by Karen M. McManus. I really liked that. And All the Colors of the Dark by Chris Whitaker, which was kind of forced upon me because the librarian said, it seems like you like dark things. You had the Karen McManus and the Vampires of the El Norte. I was like, I don't like dark things. You know, that was just like weird happenstance that there were two in the row. So then she gave me this, and this is a 600-page book. But the chapters are like 2-3 pages, which is really interesting. It seems like it's for people maybe who like struggle with maybe attention. So it, even though it's 600 pages, it's like, but you can just do a couple chapters. It's only, you know, a couple pages, but it was interesting. But Whitaker also, I feel like, puts the characters through an unnecessary amount of trauma. They're like, oh, everything's going to be okay. No, it's not going to be okay. Wait. It might turn out to be okay. Nope, never mind. It's going to be bad again. So just prepare your heart for that. And then finally, I read The Cousins by Karen McManus, and I give that 5 stars, which doesn't happen very often, but that might be my favorite one of hers. And I think so far read all of hers, but 2. So highly recommend The Cousins. I thought that was really good. And it somewhat reminded me of We Were Liars, but not like enough that it would distract anyone or take away from their enjoyment. But that was really good and was super interested in the characters as well as the mystery that was going on. So that's it. Look at that. Remember, you can send any questions or comments to backworldoracle@gmail.com. Like the show on Facebook or follow it on Twitter @backworldoracle. Subscribe to the show on YouTube for an uncut version, which unfortunately I can't put music on here either. Follow the Batman Universe on Facebook and Twitter as well. Support the Batman Universe by subscribing to Patreon. And yeah, please go over to Fire and Water Podcast and support me with Dear Reader. Iliad was this month's required reading with Tom and Stella. So you can also go over there and listen to it, which 2 completely different versions, I will say, looking at the Iliad and with Dear Reader, because I'm really doing a deep dive. I only did 1 part so far of the source material. So you can kind of choose what level of depth you want with the Iliad, if you're interested anyways. Once again, thanks to Mile High Comics for sponsoring Backworld the Oracle, the Barbara Gordon Podcast. Be sure to take care of yourselves and other people, love others, and have a wonderful Colonizers Day or Thanksgiving. And until next time, fly on, Babs lovers.
Just plain Barbara Gordon, masquerading for a lark as she rides into the night on her special Batgirl cycle. Who knows? Is the dynamic duo destined to become the triumphant trio? Only time will tell us more about this dazzling daredevil.
I love a happy ending, don't you?